From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? Happy, happy Thursday. It is July 23rd, 2015, and you are tuned into Current Sports with me, Al Martin. We've got a great show in store for you all, as customary here on each and every Thursday Current Sports Radio Show. We will be giving you all a sneak peek into tonight's Current Sports TV sit-down, which, of course, I chatted with Tori Franklin, Michigan State track and field star, who actually just wrapped up her final season as a Spartan, who is now trying to turn pro. It was a fantastic chat. You'll get to hear that interview in just a second on the show. You don't want to miss that. We'll also be dissecting a famous golfer by the name of Gary Player and his comments concerning the world of golf needing a black champion. Also, Susie Merchant offering a scholarship to a 14-year-old. And we also have Throwback Thursday on tap to close out the show. We'll also take your calls all the way up until 2 p.m. If you want to call in and give your thoughts on anything that happens to be on your sports noggin, you know that number, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports or even tweet me at Al Martin WKAR. Without further ado, let's start this party like we always do. Here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners for this July 23rd. All right, let's start with the Detroit Tigers. Nick Castellanos' first Major League Grand Slam fueled an 8-run third inning. The Tigers spent the next 6 innings trying to hold down the Seattle Mariners' offense, withstanding a pair of Nelson Cruz home runs for a 9-4 Detroit win on Wednesday night at Comerica Park. Victory moved the Tigers back to .500 at 47-47, with speculation building about his future. David Price will make his final start in Detroit before next week's non-waiver trade deadline. First pitch is just moments away, and we will keep you updated on that outing throughout the hour. The Detroit Pistons today signed first-round NBA draft pick Stanley Johnson. Using the rookie pay scale as a guide, Johnson will make roughly $2.368 million next year, $2.475 million in 2016-17, and $2.582 million in 2017-18. Those figures are not exact figures. Exact figures are not known because teams pay rookies as much as 120% or as little as 80% of the rookie scale. The Pistons will have team options for the third and fourth seasons. She has yet to even dribble a basketball in high school yet, but already has a scholarship offer from Susie Merchant and the Michigan State women's basketball team. Her name is Leia Hartman. She will be a 5'10 Okemos freshman point guard next year at 14 years old, who'll start on varsity and already has made a name for herself at the AAU circuit. Mark Stevens, who is her AAU coach out in Indiana, said that Hartman has no flaws in her game. Really looking forward to covering her this upcoming high school basketball season. Denzel Valentine was one of 4 players in double figures with 15 points as Team USA topped Puerto Rico 102-70 in pool play at the Pan American Games on Wednesday in Toronto. The soon-to-be Michigan State senior came off the bench and made 6 of 12 field goal attempts in 17 minutes of work. He went 1-for-4 from the three-point line and made 2 free throws to go with 4 rebounds, 2 assists, and a steal. Adam Silver has no doubt the NBA could see a day when Becky Hammon or another woman is head coach in the league. The commissioner said yesterday he had texted and emailed with Hammond while they were in Las Vegas, where she coached the San Antonio Spurs to the Summer League Championship on Monday night. He praised the San Antonio organization for hiring her last year as the first full-time female assistant coach in the NBA and putting her in charge of its entry in the Vegas League. Well, folks, LeBron James is setting his sights beyond the basketball court. The NBA star and his company, Spring Hill Entertainment, have signed a content creation deal with Warner Brothers that includes potential projects in film, television, and other digital properties. Warner Brothers chairman and CEO Kevin Tuscasera announced the partnership on Wednesday. Yeah, I think I'm smelling Space Jam 2 on the horizon. All right. And also, the NFL Players Association extended a settlement offer to the NFL last week regarding Tom Brady's suspension for his role in Deflategate. The offer, however, was met with silence by the NFL. It is believed Brady is holding firm on his refusal to accept any suspension, though he would consider accepting a fine. If the NFL upholds any part of his suspension, he is expected to go to federal court to fight the decision. And Jamaica stunned the United States with a pair of first-half goals, one off a blunder by goalkeeper Brad Guzan, and held on for a 2-1 victory in the Gold Cup semifinals Wednesday night that dealt the Americans their biggest upset defeat. Well, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and you're itching to share any of your thoughts, hey, call 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Again, you can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports or even tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. Well, let's go. Show. You are tuned into Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Happy Thursday, ladies and gents, boys and girls. Can you believe that the weekend is almost here? Wow. My goodness. Throughout the hour, we're going to be giving you guys an update, of course, on the Detroit Tigers and Seattle Mariners game that has just started. Again, David Price. Who knows? This may be the last time we see David Price in a Detroit Tigers jersey. Of course, Price is hitting the mound as we speak, making his final start in the D before next week's non-waiver trade deadline. So again, we'll keep you updated on how that game is panning out throughout the hour. And what you just heard, wow, pretty big upset. Jamaica stunning the United States with a pair of first half goals. What you just heard was the first goal in that game. It actually marks the first time that the United States was eliminated by an Isaac. You can probably help me pronounce this. I think it's CONCACAF.
Yes, sir.
Oh, you nailed that.
You got it.
I've been doing my soccer homework, okay? Eliminated by a CONCACAF team en route to the Gold Cup final in the era when teams outside the region, of course, were invited. Guest, the Americans lost semifinals to Brazil in 1996 and 2003, and a quarterfinal to Colombia in 2000. So just not a good outing for the United States. And I know you, Isaac, being, you know, you being such a big soccer head that you are, did you catch any of that game yesterday?
Oh, I didn't get the chance to watch any, unfortunately, just because, you know, the whole situation with my cable and everything like that.
Right,
so I couldn't stream the game. However, I did watch the highlights and was following along, and Jamaica deserved to win. At the end of the day, they deserved to win. The U.S. played terribly, absolutely terribly, in a tournament that they've historically and this year played pretty well in so far. So disappointing for the U.S. And on the tail end of that game, Mexico actually advanced to the finals against Panama with two controversial penalty calls, which is the second straight game that they've won on a regular time penalty.
Right.
Well, this time it was an extra time, but it's the second straight game they've won on an in-game penalty, and it's extremely unfortunate for Panama. The referee issued a unwarranted red card and then sent off a Panamanian player before issuing a couple of penalties Mexico's way. So Mexico will be playing Jamaica in the finals.
Yeah, I saw that. And that was an ugly game, man.
Oh, it was.
Oh, my God. They were showing the highlights on ESPN SportsCenter this morning. I'm sitting there saying, my jaw was on the floor. I mean, it got really heated throughout that game. So, but yeah, interesting stuff happening in the Gold Cup final. And a quick update, again, we're keeping you updated on the Tigers game. They're taking on the Seattle Mariners right now. David Price, again, this could be the last time you see him donning a Detroit Tigers jersey. Get this, top of the first, the Mariners already lead the Tigers. The first pitch was literally like 3 minutes ago, and Kyle Seager has homered to right field off of Price already. Oh, boy, it's for all the Tigers fans out there, man, hey, much love to you. I don't know how you guys are holding up this year, but you got to be pulling your hair out left and right. You know, I want to really briefly recap our conversation that we had yesterday on the show, Isaac. Of course, we were sort of going back and forth in our Barbershop Wednesday topic, in which we love to embrace debate each and every week here on the show. Like each and every day, for that matter, right? But anyway, on that day, we debated Becky Hammond, who is an assistant coach on the staff of the San Antonio Spurs in the NBA, who actually, you know, held head coaching ranks in the Summer League out in Las Vegas and led the San Antonio Spurs all the way to the Summer League title. And with that accomplishment, of course, the big question is whether or not we will see Becky Hammond in the near future become an NBA head coach, and what having a female head coach in the NBA ranks would say about progression in the NBA and whether or not it would happen, period. I mean, that's the big question here. So we debated back and forth. Isaac, you did believe and still do believe, excuse me, that Becky Hammond will be a head coach in the near future. And you know, when we say that, I say like the next 3 to 5 years, somewhere in that time range. And I kind of took the opposite end. I don't think so because of politics, because of individuals out there. When you talk about the respect factor, because we all know that whoever becomes the first female head coach in the NBA is going to have to deal with a lot of criticism, with a lot of players in the league, because we all know how egos flourish in the NBA, and there's a lot of outlandish egos in the league that may not respond well to having an individual of another gender telling them what to do, which I think is total baloney, you know what I mean? But you do have mindsets like that still exist in the league today. And respective GMs, because it's ultimately in their hand, the GMs and owners, to make the decision. So, you know, the respect factor for me is a big one. You know, the GMs in charge is also another big one. While I don't think it's going to happen in recent future, Becky Hammond certainly deserves to be a head coach because I think that her resume certainly speaks for itself and can stack up well against, you know, and even with Trump, a few head coaches who are currently coaching in the NBA right now. And we actually had a caller, just to sort of recap and put a bow on that conversation from yesterday. We had an outstanding call from Apachu, who was one of our dedicated listeners here on the show. And here's what Apachu had to say.
For years, I've always thought that Nancy Lieberman should have been the first female coach in the NBA. And I happen to see her during the Summer League game, so she's still around the game. She's a She's an addict, man. She loves basketball. And I read one of her books, and I saw her when she was playing. And she was incredible as a player, and she loves the game. And I think she would have been good at it. Probably still would be good at it. The other thing is that even though that lady, and I think she could be an NBA coach. I think there's a lot of women out there could be NBA coach.
Certainly.
And a lot of guys,
right?
You know, they keep recycling the same old men. You know, for the different teams. I don't know how you can lose in one place or three or four places and go to a place else to win.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, you got to remember, this is preschool. This is summer league, and everybody's behaving because they want to make the team. So I don't care who the coach is. You could be a coach, and they'd listen to you because they're trying to make a team. Now, if you get a team full of Carmelo Anthony's, you know, and you're in the NBA, how are you gonna deal with that? How do you manage those attitudes? And I haven't seen men that can manage those attitudes, you know, it's hard to watch the game with all these ridiculous attitudes of these multi-millionaires, near-billionaires, and the way they act like kids, preschoolers.
Mm-hmm.
And they have so much power because they're getting paid the big money, and they do influence the game, and they're fun to watch. But I don't think that Summer League championship is indicative of whether or not you can coach in the NBA. I'm sure she can coach in the NBA. She was a WNBA player herself. So I'm not sure that's a good gauge.
Well, again, that's one of our callers continuing on our Barbershop Wednesday topic of yesterday's show on whether or not we will soon see a female head coach in the NBA. And I think Apache made a few good points. The first point being that I do agree with Apache when you talk about managing egos. That is going to be a certain hurdle that for any female who comes into the NBA and has to, you know, hold the ranks as a head coach, you're going to have to deal with a lot of egos and a lot of players out there that may feel as though, hey, I know more than you, point blank, period. And that's going to, you know, whoever comes in, whoever that female is going to be has to have tough skin and has to assert herself as soon as she enters that organization from day one. Number two, though, I will say this. Becky Hammon did a fantastic job in leading the San Antonio Spurs to that Summer League championship. And I do think that Becky Hammon knows the game of basketball. And, you know, Apache said that it may not be a good gauge. Well, hey, I mean, for the most part, if you're a coach in the NBA at what many people consider to be the creme de la creme of basketball in the world, you know what you're doing. You obviously know the X's and O's because your road to become a head coach in the NBA has to speak for itself. So for Becky Hammon to even have that opportunity, for Becky Hammon to, you know, be an assistant coach on a staff of, you know, led by Greg Popovich, who is arguably the best coach in basketball that we have in the NBA today, I mean, that says a lot. So she obviously knows the game, whether you want to put a lot of weight on the summer league or not. It's just a matter of whether or not a team out there is going to give her a shot. One more comment here. This comes from Jessica, one of our dedicated listeners. She weighs in via our Facebook page. She says, quote, if there is ever a woman NBA coach, like you said, she is going to have tough, in all caps, skin. She's going to have a lot more to prove and continually do it, even if she does know the game and have the experience and talent. The world has a view of women, and being an NBA coach right now is not it. Not to say it won't happen one day, but it's going to take a lot. So I say, Isaac, and I kind of have to agree with Jessica on this. I say maybe 7 to 10 years we may see this, but in the distant future, I don't know. I think it's just there's a lot of politics to overcome with the situation as well. But I've been proved wrong many times once before.
I think 3 to 5 years is more of the correct estimate. And also that's just optimism because I would love to see Becky Hammon and the coach. If you watch those summer league games, you would know how well organized that team was, how much they played like their parent team, the San Antonio Spurs. It was just fun to watch, enjoyable. They played basketball the right way. And Becky Hammon, the thing about her is, I know some people might say summer league's not a great gauge, but in summer league, nobody has a player that really has been that good in the NBA. There are no superstars, so to say.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, I think a lot more of it comes down to teamwork and the coaching of that team for who wins games. And heck, it's hard to argue with the championship in the summer league.
It certainly is. Again, folks, if you want to weigh in just like Pachu did or Jessica did, hey, again, our phone lines are open right now, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. And you know our social media pages, facebook.com/currentsports and Al at Al Martin, WKAR on Twitter. Well, from gender to now race. Gary Player, a pretty famous golfer, a golf legend, to be honest with you all. He made some comments this week that have a lot of people talking concerning, you know, the popularity of golf as it pertains to race and golf's reach across, you know, not just national ranks here in the U.S. of A., but international ranks as well. Gary Player said this, quote, "We need Tiger Woods. Why? He's a man of color. We need a black champion. Go to Africa, where we've got all these young black kids used to seeing a white guy as the champ. Now they're getting inspired. They're sitting in front of their TV sets. It inspires them. It gets them interested in golf. Asia wants to see a man of color. So there are many reasons besides being so charismatic. I don't know if anybody in the world today can play like Tiger Woods did," end quote. So Gary, of course, is speaking on the popularity of golf as it not only pertains here in the U.S. of A., but as it pertains to the international crowd as well. And he believes that having a black champion or a man of color in the world of golf who is playing outstanding does a lot for the game and inspires others that normally won't even think about picking up a golf club to do so. And I have to say, Isaac, I have to totally agree with him. I mean, I've voiced these opinions numerous times here on the show. And, you know, just the overall reach that having a quote-unquote different golfer would have. And what I mean by different, we all know the historical components of the game of golf. I mean, historically, you know, not many individuals, not many men of color, men, you know, who are African-American, Asian, Latino. We haven't seen many of those individuals enter the world of golf and have immense success. Let's be honest here. Most of the golfing world and most of the PGA Tour is filled with Caucasian men, point blank period. And that's why when Tiger Woods came in, a guy who looked different, who was, you know, who is African-American and Asian, he comes in and, you know, not only looks different, but he just dominates the game as well. I mean, winning the U.S. Open by, you know, 15 strokes. I had never seen a phenomenon like that in the history of golf. And I've been watching the sport. And I tell you what, I wouldn't be as big as a golf fan as I am today and would not have probably even picked up a club if it wasn't for Tiger Woods, to be honest with you. And seeing that phenomenon, I mean, again, I always tell the story of how he made, you know, my dad go out there and try the game of golf. He made my neighbor who introduced me to the game go out there and try a hand at the game of golf. It was so crazy because, you know, when Tiger Woods was at the top of his game, I would go to respective golf courses in Detroit as a high school kid. One of the golf courses that I used to play at, and then the very first golf course that I actually played at, was Rogel Golf Course. It was actually owned by Greater Grace Baptist Church, which is one of the biggest churches in the Detroit area. Right now, it's been closed down. It's been closed down for now, I want to say like 2 to 3 years now, due to lack of moolah. And, you know, a shocking stat, you know, they always bring up that, you know, that a golf course now closes in the world. In the U.S. of A., one golf course closes every 48 hours. Mind-boggling stuff. And Rogel Golf Course has now since been closed down. But I remember going to Rogel Golf Course, Isaac, and seeing, you know, guys from my, you know, from my community, African-Americans, go out there and be glued to their TVs on Sundays, because that's when we would go, was on Sundays. And, you know, those were, you know, happened to be some days where Tiger Woods was playing. And they would just be talking about Tiger Woods and how they want to go out there and be like Tiger and go out there and play. I mean, unbelievable. We know the Nike commercial, much like the Like Mike commercials that took place in the NBA when Michael Jordan was at the prime of his career, you know, where it had different kids of different ethnic descents and different backgrounds looking into the camera and saying, "I am Tiger Woods." Things like that expand. You know, when kids from Africa or kids from different nationalities look at the game of golf and they see somebody that they can relate to, it can inspire them. And that's why I do see where Gary Player is coming from with that being said. Now, there's also the flip of the coin that says that, you know, the upper echelons and executives in golf right now, they're not hurting, I don't think, Izzy, because there's a lot of young talent that is sustaining the game and has the game at a healthy place right now. Something that I was worried about, you know, before last year or even a year and a half from now. Guys like Jordan Spieth, Rory McIlroy, Ricky Fowler, that young talent is going to bring the average golf fan, you know, it's going to pique their interest and maybe introduce other golfers to the game as well. But I will say, having a man of color would do a lot for the game, and I understand where Gary is coming from.
Well, there's sure, like you said, there's certainly no talent drought right now in golf with Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, and a bunch of other young golfers who are coming up. However, I think I agree with Gary Player overall, who it's worth noting, he's South African. So when he makes the comments about Africa,
he knows.
He knows. He's been there. I think there are other considerations to take into account as well, though, such as the fact that a lot of African countries are just more arid, drier. It's tougher to keep up a golf course there, especially when somebody has to fund it, if it's a rural area. Same with Asia. So there are those considerations. But more than anything, I think the game needs an African or an Asian champion to expand the game across seas. Because while I think Tiger Woods really piqued African-American interest in golf, I can't say that I see that many African golfers right now or Asian golfers, because when you look at the NBA didn't start expanding into Africa or Asia until after there was actually an Asian or African player who grew up in that continent of Africa, which was in the 80s for the NBA. NBA players didn't start coming from Africa until after that. Hakeem Olajuwon, Manute Bol, those types of players, when they came over, that's when the game started gaining popularity in Africa, although basketball has always been a primarily African-American sport in the NBA.
Mm-hmm. And that's why, you know, that's where that term, you know, in basketball, you hear from time to time announcers say, who is the next great white hope? Because the game is so, you know, African-American laden. And that's why, you know, to equip it to the NBA, a prime example that you can look at that you know, was about what? That happened like 4 years ago was when Jeremy Lin, you know, when we had the whole Linsanity thing. I mean, you started to see, you know, Jeremy Lin, who is, I believe, he's of Chinese descent, I believe.
He's of Chinese descent, yeah. But he grew up in America.
And he grew up in America. He went to an Ivy League school, I think
Harvard.
Stanford, right?
Harvard.
Or Harvard. Yeah, he went to Harvard. And I remember when Linsanity was taking place, when Jeremy Lin came out of nowhere for the New York Knicks and is throwing up these ridiculous, you know, stats game after game after game in the NBA. I mean, you start to see, you know, and there were reports done on individuals, you know, in China who are growing up there hitting the basketball courts and giving their hand at basketball because of what they were seeing from Jeremy Lin. So, again, you know, people want to see someone that they can relate to, and it does a lot for the youth who play the game or who want to play golf or want to play basketball, whatever sport it may be, because they have an idol to look up to and say, hey, I want to be like this individual. So I definitely see where Gary Player's comments are coming from. Call in, folks, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Isaac, you know, one of the biggest joys of doing my job here in Mid-Michigan as a sports reporter and host here at WKAR is that I get to cover, I always say that Lansing is like the best of all worlds. I get to cover a Division I athletic venue like Michigan State University. I get to cover Michigan sports as well, depending on the game and depending on the week and so on and so forth. But I also get to cover, you know, the pros. I remember covering a World Series my rookie year as a sports reporter here in the area when the Tigers fell to the New York Yankees. That was fantastic. But what I love the most, what I love covering the most in this area is high school sports. There's nothing like it. Rallying around the community, seeing, you know, how the community rallies around, you know, their respective school and you know, depending on, you know, what school it is. Hey, I've seen state championship teams and state championships dreams come true based on a few local Mid-Michigan schools from around the area. And I just love it. And this story kind of got me amped up, as if I wasn't already more amped up to cover high school sports and to get back in the thick of things when it comes to that realm. But Leia Hartman, how about that? I mean, Susie Merchant, who is the head women's basketball coach for Michigan State, of course, Susie Merchant has extended a scholarship to an incoming freshman by the name of Leia Hartman. She will be a 5'10" Okemos High School freshman point guard at 14 years old. So she has yet to play, yet to even dribble a basketball in a high school basketball game, but will already, you know, be playing varsity as a freshman for the Chiefs this upcoming season. And, you know, I'm looking at the reviews, and I didn't know anything about this young woman until I read this story in last night's Detroit Free Press website. And I'm reading the story, and my goodness. And then Mark Stevens, who is her AAU coach out in Indiana. I mean, Mark talks about, you know, very highly of her, saying that she has no flaws in her game. Wow. I'm pretty excited about this. And it just shows you, I mean, again, she's already been offered a scholarship from a Division I women's college basketball program like Michigan State before even playing one high school basketball game. So obviously Susie Merchant is very high on Hartman, but it kind of puts in perspective just how competitive recruiting is. And already, I remember we had Amaka Ogugwa and David Thomas on the show. Amaka Ogugwa is the assistant coach with Susie Merchant for the Spartans. And David Thomas is, of course, director of communications for the program. And Amaka, you know, she kind of let the cat out the bag when we had her on the TV show and said that we're already looking at 12, 13, 14-year-olds to possibly be a Spartan in the future. And hey, she may have been talking about, I'm sure Leia Hartman's name crossed her mind when she said that on the air. But it's amazing how young recruiting, you know, is becoming and has become. And, you know, already, you know, individuals are being offered scholarships without even playing, one high school game. You know, there's the argument that comes in whether or not that's healthy for the kid, because you don't know. Yeah, let's be honest here. Recruiting in many ways is a crapshoot. Leia Hartman could very well come to the Michigan State women's basketball program and be a total flop. Or she could come and be a game changer. You just never know sometimes, because I've seen, you know, both sides of that whole speculation when a student athlete comes out of high school to the college ranks. But it amazes me just how young these recruits are becoming now. And it's kind of scary. It is kind of scary for me, Isaac, because with that comes a lot of pressure, to be honest with you. It certainly does.
Ow, there's so much pressure there. And USC actually has a recruit coming in this year who they offered a scholarship to at 13. He's finally coming in. He's a QB. His name is David Sills. They offered him a scholarship when he was 13 in seventh grade. And he's coming to USC. He is. But, okay, first off, I want to congratulate Leia Hartman for this, because this is amazing. If you get offered a scholarship at eighth grade, wow, you are good. That says something. Like you said, it shows the competitive edge of recruiting, because who offers you a scholarship first does matter. I remember Tracy Porter chose Indiana over schools like LSU and Alabama because Indiana offered him a scholarship junior year while the rest waited till senior year. Mm-hmm. So that does matter. However, I think the NCAA might want to clamp down on issues like this a little bit, because I do think it puts undue pressure on these kids to perform and gives them an unfair and unbalanced amount of stress for their age. So I would actually love to see the NCAA remove some of the restrictions about, I don't know, basketball coaches playing basketball with recruits, because that's not allowed, but offering a scholarship to seventh graders, eighth graders is. I just think maybe the NCAA should say, hold off a little bit. Let's wait until they're in high school at least to start offering them scholarships.
And, you know, it's so mind-boggling, because Rivals.com actually has recruiting profiles now for sixth graders. Can you believe that? I mean, that's unbelievable. Unbelievable stuff. I mean, we're talking about kids who were born in 2002, 2003, and you got recruiting profiles already up for kids that are that young. And again, with that comes a lot of pressure. And what if these kids go to high school, Isaac, and don't pan out to be great players in high school? Who knows? Because we all know, you know, how you know, you can either sink or swim when moving up levels in athletic competition, no matter what that level may be. So what if let's say Leah Hartman, I'm just thinking worst case scenario here. What if she goes to Okemos High School and isn't the player that Susie and the program thought she was? They could pull that scholarship, and then you're talking about messing with the kid's future because, hey, you know, what if Leah, you know, is banking on becoming a Spartan? They pull the scholarship. What is she going to do now? So it gets sticky. It gets really sticky, and the question now becomes, how young is too young?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying, because the thing is, imagine that pressure from 7th or 8th grade on, knowing that, gosh, if I don't perform, I could have my scholarship yanked. I've got free school, free room and board, and a chance to play in the WNBA, really, when you go to a prestigious program like Michigan State, especially when you're offered it that early, you're pretty much certain to be one of the best players in the nation. Mm-hmm. So you've got all of that, and you're like, wow, one injury, one bad season, all of that could be done for. So I think Right. It's a little bit unfair to these kids to give them this media scrutinization and all of the scholarship offers and even contact from colleges at this early of an age. I'd also like to correct myself. David Sills, the quarterback I mentioned, Actually decommitted from USC, but he's entering this.
Okay.
He's about to be a freshman, and he will play quarterback in college.
Yeah. How young is too young, folks? And again, you know, it's an interesting article written on the SB Nation website by Bud Elliott. And, you know, again, they sort of break down how young is too young. And the article was actually written in February of this year. And it has a picture up of Darren Bryden, who's actually a kid out in Connecticut Middle School. He's in sixth grade, 5'2", 105 pounds, class of 2021. Are you kidding me? And again, this is on Rivals.com. I don't know if it's still posted because, again, this article was written in February. So I don't know if it's still posted on the Rivals.com website, but they did discover this profile of a sixth grader already on a recruiting website. So, crazy stuff, though. I'm looking forward to seeing Leah Hartman, though. The hype machine is turned up times 20, and I'm looking forward to seeing her hit the hardwood for the Okemos High School girls varsity basketball team. All right, let's hit our first break. When we come back, folks, we will give you a sneak peek preview of tonight's current sports television sit-down with Michigan State track and field star Torrey Franklin. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. You are tuned into Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Really briefly here, here's your comedy for the day. I love to bring you guys funny sports stories that, you know, really, really, really tickle me. And this is one that really had me in tears, okay? You got to check this out. If you have not been following the social media feud between NBA great, NBA, you know, former big man Shaquille O'Neal, and of course, one of the 50 greatest basketball players in NBA history, Scottie Pippen, you're missing out on life. It actually started with Shaq, who on his Instagram page, he tweeted a photo, pretty interesting photo, and he had a lineup of some Los Angeles Lakers greats. And then right below that montage was a picture of some of the greatest Chicago Bulls to ever play. So for the Lakers, of course, Shaq had up there on his picture Magic Johnson, Kobe Bryant, Elgin Baylor, himself, Shaquille O'Neal, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Right below that picture, donned in Bulls jerseys, of course, Derrick Rose, the greatest of all time, Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, Dennis Rodman, and Horace Grant. And then underneath that montage, that picture, Shaq put, "We would beat him by 50. What do you think? Let me know and don't hold back." Scottie retaliated. He tweeted he Instagrammed a picture of him and Mike, you know, smoking cigars, drinking beer right after they won a championship game. And he said, "Sorry, Shaq, but I don't get caught up in hypotheticals. All I know is we won 6 titles, twice the amount you claim while in L.A. And then Shaq very cleverly Instagrammed another picture, that same picture that Scottie Pippen posted, but he replaced the head of Scottie Pippen with Michael Jordan's picture. So Michael Jordan is basically walking with himself. You get it? You get it? You know, basically saying that, yeah, that's Michael's team. You are just the Robin to his Batman. It went on for a while, folks. It went on for a long time. But the Bleacher Report has, you know, just now tweeted out a pretty cool video. And they have actually taken this debate to the video game world. And you can watch a little over two minute video of those individuals I just named, the Los Angeles Lakers greats versus the Chicago Bulls greats. And the video settles that dispute, if you will. How accurately it does that, I don't know. That's up for debate. But check out the video. I'll be sure to tweet it out. Pretty funny stuff. You got to see it, folks. All right. Well, let's give you guys our customary sneak peek into tonight's Current Sports Television sit-down. This week, of course, with Torrey Franklin, Michigan State track and field star. Torrey Franklin was, of course, a part of this year's squad, which took home the Big Ten Outdoor Track and Field Championship, which was hosted at MSU for the first time in a long time. Very cool pictures on the website of the team, you know, in celebration mode with the champion T-shirts. Torrey Franklin is actually crying on many of those pictures. It's great stuff. So with Torrey's career now being done as a jumper, she participated in triple jump and long jump. She was very decorated, accomplishments everywhere. We invited Torrey to our WKAR TV studios to talk about her career as a Spartan. Now that it's all said and done and she's looking, you know, to turn pro and possibly compete in the Olympics, I had to start by asking her, is it scary at all to wrap her head around the fact that her college career is now done?
Yeah, definitely. I'm in that process right now trying to figure things out because I feel like once you graduate or you're done with your athletic career, people are just kind of pushing you out, like, get out of here. And I'm like, wait a second, you know, I'll go, just slow it down.
Right.
I'm not ready.
Right, exactly. So, and you actually, you will still be here in the area until December, mm-hmm. taking classes. You actually walked this past May, I believe, right? What was that feeling like?
That was so exciting. Honestly, I didn't want to do it at first. But then my mom's like, come on, your whole family will be here and it'll be fun. And it was. It was a really great time.
You've had a pretty decorated career, to say the least, you know, being an athlete here at Michigan State with the track and field team. But you shared with me when you actually a guest on our radio show about 2 months or so ago, mm-hmm. that this past season was the worst healthy season you've ever had. Why is that?
It was just not good. I wasn't myself. I wasn't prepared mentally for it. Physically, I was definitely prepared because I was doing all the training. But just a lot of things were going on at the time of the season, so it just wasn't the right time for me.
How'd you push through that? What was going on?
I pushed through it with my friends and family and prayer and such. And eventually, I made it to the NCAA track meet in Oregon, and I was able to compete the best that I had in my entire season there, so that was great.
The mental part of athletics in general, I mean, not just track and field, I mean, you can equate this to football, basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Mentally, you had to be all there.
Yes.
To make sure that you go out there and put forth your best performance.
Mm-hmm.
How, with those distractions that you talk about, how did you put that on the back burner to say, okay, I'm going to put all that behind me and just go out there and compete?
Mm-hmm. Well, really, you have to remember why you do it. And I guess I forgot that. And I do track because I love it and because it's fun and it's going to be able to take me places in the future. And so I just really had to just forget everything else. Just go
woosah.
Yeah.
Why did you start track and field? Take us there.
Well, the basketball season had just ended, freshman year of high school. I was turning in my uniform, and as I turned in my basketball uniform, they gave me a track uniform. And I was like, wait, what? And they're like, yeah, you're on the varsity team. Go to practice. And I was like, okay.
So you just did it.
Yeah. They like recruited me from the basketball team because they said I looked fast.
Wow. And talk about your high school career.
High school was fun. I made state every single year. I'm from Chicago, so it's a little different than it is here in Michigan. And I got 15th my freshman year, then I got 7th or 8th, and then I got first place, and then I got second place. So it was a ride.
Now, Tori, I've seen the pictures. Pretty special season for you all in the squad, because you all were named as the Big Ten Outdoor Track and Field Champions, which was hosted right here in East Lansing on the campus of Michigan State. I saw the pictures because I was kind of at home following on social media to see if you guys would pull it out. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, you start to see these wave of tweets, you know, congratulating you all. And then you saw the pictures. And on a few of those pictures, I looked at you.
Oh, gosh.
And the tears were streaming down your face. An unbelievable moment. What capsulizing that moment for you, when the points were revealed and you guys sat atop of everyone to pull out that championship, I mean, what went through your head?
It was a lot. It was so exciting because it was the first time our team had ever won in 33 years. And every single year I've ever been, my 4 years, we've always placed like fifth place, sixth place, you know, never quite up there. And just for some reason, like our whole team, our mentality was just like awesome this year. And we prepared for it. We knew this is what we wanted to do as a team. We had meetings and poster parties and stuff like that. And we just did it.
So it's all about chemistry, right? That's what it all comes down to as well.
Yep.
What was it like competing under the tutelage of course, Walt Drimp, the director of cross country and track and field here at Michigan State?
He's awesome. He's pretty cool.
That's all? He's awesome? Come on. Elaborate on that.
Yeah. Well, he's really motivating and inspiring to the team. He holds, like, obviously, we have our team meetings and things, but he goes, like, more in depth of trying to get us to recognize our full potential. Mm-hmm. And making sure we all know that that's a legitimate thing to win Big Tens, and he really did that. He really like led the way for that to happen.
What a season it was for that respective squad. Now again, Tori, your time competing in athletics here at Michigan State is done now, and you sort of shift that focus. You still want to compete, maybe at the Olympic level, turn pro. For those out there like myself that don't know how that process works. Mm-hmm. What now ensues, now that your career is done, in order to accomplish that goal?
For me personally, I did not receive a sponsorship right at the end of my collegiate career. Mm-hmm. So now what I have to do, train with my coach throughout this fall season. I'm probably going to move down south where I can train throughout the whole year, because we all know how winters are here.
Right, exactly.
And from there, get into meets, get my marks up, and then eventually get a sponsorship and make USA teams. And that's basically what the professionalism is.
Now, I've heard that a lot. I mean, getting sponsorships is a big part of this whole deal.
Yep.
How do you go about that? Do you reach out to them? Do they reach out to you? How does that work?
It can really go both ways. If you're the Lee O'Connors of the team, they will find you, and they'll make sure it happens. There's a couple other people on the team that are planning to compete professionally that have graduated. So for us, we have to pursue them and make sure they know our potential, and we just give them a reason to want to come find us.
Gotcha. And how's that process working for you?
Really good.
Really good.
Really good.
She actually let the news out the bag before we took the air. We can't say it right now, but best believe we will keep you updated on how that whole thing is coming, okay? So that's it's a great tease, right? All right, now, Tori, being from Chicago, Illinois, what was that like for you growing up?
It was awesome. Well, you know what you mean? It's the same as growing up anywhere else, except people call it Chirac, and you're like, no, you're not going to die, you know. But it was fun. It was fun. Yes.
Right. Now, when you look at your career in track and field, I mean, what's your plan B? You ever thought about that?
Yes, of course.
What is that?
My major is in economics, but I pursue hospitality business.
Okay.
So I plan to go into management of hotels.
Really?
Such, yeah.
How did that interest peak?
Well, all my life I've always planned events, like friends' parties, my parties, just hangouts with people from all over the place. So I realized I could do that as a profession, like event planning in hospitality. But when I had my internship, I realized I am better as a leader. So management is kind of what I figured.
Have you reached out to anyone to give you advice on, you know, life after athletics, yes. life after track and field. Mm-hmm. Who were those people and what have they told you?
Well, actually, I'm meeting with Judy Clark. She was an Olympian in the 1996 Atlanta Olympics, mm-hmm. I believe. She won the hurdles, 400 hurdles.
She was pretty good.
Yes, she was good. And so, yeah, she's been a really good motivation and just someone to look up to. Mm-hmm. She's actually the mother of one of my teammates.
So. Oh, nice, mm-hmm. nice. Have you talked to her yet?
I'm going to go talk to her tomorrow. I guess.
Oh, okay, mm-hmm. there you go. Okay, so she hasn't given you any advice mm-hmm. just yet. Now, competing at NCAAs, let's go to near the end of the year for you. Of course, you were in Eugene, Oregon, as you just stated. How were you pleased with your overall performance there?
I was okay with it. Mm-hmm. Obviously, as an athlete, you know you can always do better. But it was, like I said, the best that I had done all year. So I was okay with the performance.
Why just okay? I can see that you're reserving a few emotions when you say that. Why?
Mm-hmm. Because I jumped 43, I forget, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. But I didn't jump my best. And it's just a little disappointing when you go out to your last national track meet and don't perform your best.
When the dust had settled on that meet mm-hmm. and it hits you that, oh, that's it.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
What was that feeling like?
It sucks. And I was even talking to other alumni athletes because I wasn't really sure what I was feeling. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh no, that's common. You know, when you have your last track meet, your last basketball game, your last football game, anything, you're kind of just like, wow. Like, are things that I've been doing my entire life, I'm done with. And it's just something you have to get used to and kind of figure out your new way.
Do you feel like your career here at Michigan State was fulfilled?
Mostly. I think it was. I've done a lot and I've accomplished a lot. And so I'm proud of what I've done here. And, you know, I can't cry over spilled milk with the things I didn't accomplish.
Well, hey, you had one illustrious career while you were here at Michigan State, Tori. And, you know, another team I want to briefly hit on, which I'm sure served as motivation for you all when looking at what they were able to accomplish, is, of course, the women's cross-country team, which mm-hmm. won a national championship. I mean, that's unbelievable stuff. Watching what they did, how did that serve as motivation for you all, you know, before you guys hit the field?
Mm-hmm. They were really good about bringing their momentum and motivation to the track team and helping us figure out how we were going to get, how we were going to all, collaborate and make sure our heads were in the same place and achieve what we did at the end of the season. So I'm really happy that for their success in that and how they brought it over to the track team.
Leah O'Connor may go down. You can make an argument that she is the most decorated track and field athlete at Michigan State in the history of Michigan State. What's it like competing with her and getting to know her? What's she like, first off, away from the field?
Mm-hmm. She's crazy. People say that her and I are alike, but I don't know that. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
But, she's really fun. She's a great girl. And she's motivated, and that's what's good to see and a good thing to have on the team.
What separates her from, you think, the average competitor out there?
Maybe her humbleness and how she's just so light with it. She doesn't let things weigh down on her or get super overwhelmed with competition or what people expect her to do on the track.
Gotcha. Gotta love that. All right, before we let the 12 men get at you, Tori, the overall brand that has now been built in the world of track and field for Michigan State, it's in a pretty healthy place if you ask me. But
yes.
when you talk to others around the conference, I'm pretty sure when you went to NCAAs and you donned that Michigan State apparel, talking to other athletes, I mean, what is the general feeling when you bring up the track and field program here at Michigan State? Is it on the rise? Has it changed? Has it stayed the same? What is your assessment of that?
It's definitely risen a lot. I think people people always have something good to say about our team because we're not just one star person. We have a lot of really good athletes. We're all around a solid team. Mm-hmm. So there's always something positive to say about any event or any person on our team.
What do they say? If you could put that into context, I mean, is Michigan State among the top five? I mean, mm-hmm. the best or what?
In the nation?
Yeah, in the nation, when you compare it to the nation.
In the nation, we are not that high.
mm-hmm. Even with the national mm-hmm. championship in cross country?
The cross country
right.
team, yeah. But as a whole, the whole track team, our presence at the NCAA, it's good. We do perform when we do have people that place in the top 10 every time. But we don't have a lot of people there, but it's still definitely a presence.
All right, Tori. Always ask this to anyone who has finished up a career in anything here on the show. You completing your career as a member of the Michigan State track and field team. What's been your favorite memory?
My favorite memory? I guess it would be at regionals. Last year, my junior year, I think you've heard this story.
Mm-hmm. No, go ahead.
I was in 14th place, and at regionals they only take the top 12 to nationals. So, and I don't know where my mind was, but I had one jump left to make it. Mm-hmm. My team, three of my team members, they came over to me. They're like, "What are you doing, Toto? What are you doing? Get up there! You jump, Frank." I don't know what these names they were calling me, but I was like, "Yeah, they're right. I'm gonna do this."
So like the little engine that could, right?
Yeah, I was like, I can do this. And then I jumped to first place, and I made it to nationals that year.
Wow, all the way to nationals. Mm-hmm. Now, you just mentioned the name. I wasn't going to bring it up, but you brought it up. You actually have two sides to you, mm-hmm. you know, when you're away from what you do on the track and field. And, of course, you know, when you are doing what you do on the track and field. And you've dubbed that extra person Toto. Explain
Why do you make that face when
Toto.
You say it?
Toto. Where does that come from? Who is Toto?
I am Toto. Toto is me. We are the same. But she's just the one that gets all riled up. You know, she's not a nice person, and she comes for blood.
Fierce competitor.
Does. Yes.
Everyone has like that alter ego, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh boy, gotta love that. I think like Beyonce is like Sasha Fierce or something like that.
Yep.
I don't know what mine is. I guess it's just Al.
Al.
It's kind of boring, isn't it?
The LA backwards.
L.A. backwards? Come on, Tori. Come on now. No, it was a fantastic time sitting down with Tori Franklin. Again, tune in tonight at 10 p.m. WKRTV, Current Sports TV, hits your airwaves. You also get to see that feature and profile on the DeWitt competitive cheer team, which, of course, was invited out to Japan. They're out in Japan right now, and they return next week Wednesday. So tune in. Going to be a hot show. All right, well, we put a bow on this Thursday's show, of course, like we always do, Throwback Thursday. What exactly took place in sports history on this particular date in sports, July 23rd?
But the Detroit Pistons have just shocked the Los Angeles Lakers.
Wing, there's a drive to left. That one is long.
Eisenman back over his step. Into the slot for Brown. Shoots, yes. Good.
All right, well, I've only got three moments for you all today. In 2000, Lance Armstrong won his second Tour de France title. In 2000 as well, on that same day, Tiger Woods became the youngest player to complete a career Grand Slam when he won the British Open at 24 years old. And in 2009, Mark Berlisle of the Chicago White Sox pitched the 18th perfect game in Major League Baseball history. The Sox beat Tampa Bay 5-0. All right, well, thanks so much to all of you out there for tuning in to today's edition of Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. As always, take care. Have one fantastic Thursday afternoon. We'll have James Moore of the SWAP Youth Football Camp. Of course, James is also a former Michigan State football great. He will join me live in studio. You don't want to miss that tomorrow. Take care, folks, and be easy, people.